Campus FM jippreżenta lecture organizzata mill-Istitut Agostinjan bis-suġġett Wistin il-Filosfu. Il-kellem ewlieni huwa Dr. Claude Mangione.
Illejla għandi l-pjaċir li għandna Dr. Claude Mangione li huwa lecturer senior lecturer fil-Dipartiment tal-Filosofija. Issa nħalli jgħidu fuq nifsu. U l-lecture huwa bl-Ingliż però se jagħmel l-ewwel 10 minutes qed jina overview, jiġifieri fuq issa jkun il-lecture. U nieħu gost li persuni bħal dawn li aħħar mill-aħħar huma ta' ispirazzjoni filosofika li jiġu jgħinuna hawnhekk ukoll din is-sitwazzjoni biex jispjegawna fuq Sant'Agostinu, il-filosofija ta' Sant'Agostinu. Nirringrazzjak ħafna, Claude.
L-erja tiegħi fl-università hi l-filosofija kontemporanja u speċifikament il-Franċiżi u l-Ġermaniżi. Imma għandi wkoll ftit ta' interess fit-teoriji tal-komunikazzjoni u tal-kultura. Meta ngħid inħobb il-filosofi Franċiżi qed insemmi dawk il-kontemporani bħal forsi smajtu bihom Derrida u Foucault u daw in-nies li fit-tradizzjoni tal-filosofija imorru kontra il-tradizzjoni. Per eżempju, il-soltu il-filosofija tal-ponent taħseb f'idejat universali. Taħseb li diskors tal-filosofija meta jingħid xi ħaġa fuq il-ħajja qed nitkellem fuq il-ħajja ta' kulħadd universali. Meta it-tradizzjoni griega jitkellmu fuq il-metafiżika, il-Grieg jitkellmux fir-realtà, pereżempju, jew l-eżistenza għaw Malta biss jew Franza biss, imma l-eżistenza in ġenerali, universali in ġenerali, għal kulħadd. Issa daw il-Franċiżi almenu mhux kollha, ma daw isu jikkritikaw da tip da diskors, jgħidu da l-universalizmu. Xempju tal-poter tal-pajjiżi tal-punent. Isu huma jaraw il-filosofija bħala attentat ta' dominazzjoni tal-kulturi l-oħrajn, tal-sibijiet ta' pajjiżi oħrajn. Allura huma mhux relativisti, imma isu jmorru kontra direzzjoni ta' filosofija. Issa fil-paper li ħanaqra, anki jekk inħobb il-daw in-nies, qed imur isu kontrihom, qed ngħid li ħanajt li Sant'Agostin almenu fil-proġett tiegħu tal-Confessions, qed iwassal messaġġ universali. Jien meta Fader Caruana qal li biex nagħti tok fuq Sant'Agostin ħadd qata, għax m'iniex scholar bħalma ġieli jitkellmu hawn fuq Sant'Agostin. U tażint biex nitkellem fuq filosofija ġenerali kienet tkun isu topic kbira wis. U ssib ħafna materjal isu fuq internet jew kodba fuq Augustine's Philosophy. Allura isu anki għalija isu fukajt fuq il-Confessions, għax kien joġobni, u kienet toġobni wkoll autobiography, il-kodba fej il-kittib jikteb fuq lilu nnifsu. U daw it-tip, dal-ġanr, dat-tip ta' kodba, autobiographical writings, l-għagġa, Augustine konsidrat l-ewwel wieħed fil-istorja tal-punent li kiteb fuq lilu nnifsu bċertu intensità u passjoni. Mbagħad kien hemm oħrajn, kien hemm Jean-Jacques Rousseau li kiteb tip ukoll Confessions li dak il-kontra ta' Agostin, jekk Sant'Agostin forsi jrid juri l-umiltà tiegħu u s-salvazzjoni fil-fidi nisranija, Rousseau kien moħħu qisu biex jiftaħar fuq lilu nnifsu, biex juri l-oħrajn kemm huma kienu żbaljati fuqu, kemm hu qisu kellu raġun u kemm kien unik. U persuna speċjali, insomma, eċċetera. Issa il-kitba autobiografika tippreżenta problemi għax meta tipprova tagħti definition, tgħid okej x'inhuma l-karatteristiċi Sotu xaħti għajt, il-kitib juża l-first person, I went there, I did this, eġi, għet jitkellem fuq lilu n-nifsu. Allora, tabent, għaw minn jgħajt għamela diki l-identifying feature, dik il-ħagġa li. Bisum bat, ovvjament, parma nasib ġa f-sibtu, wieħed jista' jgħid l-istess ħaġa f-novel, f-storja. Jekk taqra storja komuni, karattru m'hemmx dan ikun fit-third person, he did this, he did that, imma jitkellem fil-first person. Allura isu xi nisqalu mela x'inhi d-differenza bej fiction u autobiography. Jekk l-istil. Meta tagħti definizzjoni ta' xi ħaġa, jekk trid tagħti definition ta' autobiography. Trid tgħid x'inhu ma l-affarijiet speċjali ta' dik il-ħaġa li qed tagħti definition. Allura, jekk tgħid autobiography, first person. Nista xi qed jgħid il-kontra, jgħid li first person tista' tkun ukoll fl-istejjer. Allura isu dik isu twaqqa l-argument jew twaqqa definition. U allura xi nies jgħidu ma l-fiction storja u forsi immaġinazzjoni. Imma autobiography hemm il-verità. Dak li qed jikteb sotu qed jikteb fuq il-veritajiet tiegħu innifsu. U naħseb ħafna nies hekk jaħsbu fuq l-autobiografika, il-kitba autobiografika li hemm il-verità involuta. Allora, isu dak isu l-ewwel pass tal-paper, nitkellem ftit fuq hekk, fuq autobiography, definition u fuq truth. Li mbagħad provajt nagħmel jekk nassumu li l-verità hi il-karakteristiċa, il-defining characteristic tal-kitba autobiografika, x'jiġri meta jkun hemm dawk esperti ħafna iżjed minni, pereżempju, fuq Augustine, li esperti li biex nuża kelma pożittiva, jattakkaw, jgħidu mhux vera ġara hekk, jew għandhom dubji. U bħala eżempju, qed nuża, biex ngħidlek, qed nuża ġiex writers oħrajn, O'Donnell u Clark, li jiċċallenġjaw xi affarijiet li qal Augustine fil-Confessions. Fil-Confessions. Donatizmu hekk. Allura isu jek immaġina tkun qed taqra hekk dawn l-affarijiet li tajt mela ma nemmen xej li qal Augustine fil-Confessions. Mela tabint forsi hawn minn hekk estrem, hawn minn ifittex dawn l-affarijiet, u jgħid qed tara kollu. U isu mbagħad, allora l-ewwel qatt isu l-kontra, mbagħad biex niddifendi l-argument tiegħi almenu f'din il-paper li mhux importanti daqshekk jekk qed jgħid il-verità jew le, għax mhux il-punt tal-ktieb tiegħu li qed jitkellem fuq lilu nnifsu, imma li jikkomunika messaġġ ta' salvazzjoni, li jikkomunika il-viżjoni nisranija tal-ħajja. Allura, dawk l-episodji kollha ta' ħajtu, ta' bent meta sera l-lanġas, jew l-affarijiet, jew meta kien imur it-teatru, jew meta kien jixrob, jew sess. Jiena tajt dawk eżempji ta' affarijiet li parti mill-sitwazzjoni ta' kulħadd, il-human condition. Jiġifieri qed ngħid u qed juża daw l-episodji biex l-ajdi l-reader u f'moħħu għandu il-persuna li ħajaqra l-ktieb u jara lilu nnifsu fil-ktieb. Jiġifieri qed ngħid il-confessions mhux primarjament fuqu, għax ukoll kien hemm pereżempju nikotom ġiex kittieba li wieħed, pereżempju jgħid jekk temmen il-confessions, Augustine mela ibati minn neurotic conflicts. Jiena qed ngħid li żball taqra l-confessions bħala factual account ta' ħajtu ta' xi ġara. Jiena qed ngħid li bħala rhetorician, Augustine kien interessat fir-retorika meta tagħti tok trid tkun taf l-udjenza tiegħek għal min qed timmiraħ. U qed ngħid u kien qed jimmiraħ għal persuni, ok, fi żmienu rajt li kienu forsi ftit edukati biex fehmu l-ktieb, imma biex ikollu effett fuq il-ħajja tan-nies. Min jara, biex dak li jkun jara lilu nnifsu, jew jekk sera xi darba, jew jekk għamel xi dawk l-affarijiet kollha, U biex juriħ li dejjem għandu ċans imur lura jikkupalma jikkonvertiju fil-ewwel disa kotba. Kulħadd għandu ċans jsib il-fidi Isranija. Naħseb dik summary tal-paper li issa ħanaqra bil-mut u bl-Ingliż. Then a title tal-paper, Edification, to edify, to instruct, Edification and Autobiography in Augustine's Confessions. The philosophy of Augustine has long fascinated philosophers, and this renewed fascination with his philosophy is apparent in the publications on various aspects of his philosophy by key figures on the continent, such as Martin Heidegger, Hannah Arendt, Paul Ricoeur, Jean-François Lyotard and Jacques Derrida. And recently, Augustine has been the subject of a conference whose proceedings have been published as Augustine and Postmodernism, where Augustine has been described as preempting the Cartesian subject with his views of both the subject as subjected to forces other than himself or his thoughts, and of the body as essential rather than a contingent feature of human identity. However, while scholars have been drawn to Augustine out of interest in his metaphysical and theological concerns, among others, among his reading public, he is probably more generally known for his search for God as a lived personal experience, the kind of experience described in the Confessions. It is axiomatic in autobiographical writings that the relationship between the author and the text is one of truth. The author wants to present the truth of his life, and at times this entails a defense of his life against the slander of his critics. To a certain extent, some scholars claim that this is also true of Augustine, who wanted to defend himself against those who doubted his genuine conversion to the Christian faith. However, unlike other autobiographers who want to reveal their own truths, the purpose of the Confessions is not only to present the facts of Augustine's life, or in contemporary jargon, to get the record straight, but also to show how, with the benefit of hindsight, the individual contingencies of his life were the necessary condition for his conversion to the Christian faith. In this paper, I want to present a modest defense of the value of the Confessions. This defense is necessary as a number of scholars have questioned some of the facts and motives narrated by Augustine in this text, written several years after his actual conversion. My argument is simple. Even if some or all of the facts are, let us say this in the most extreme form, false, this does not detract from the value of the Confessions. On my reading, this value is derived not by paying attention to the specifics narrated, to the empirical details of Augustine's life, but to the effect the text is to have upon its readers. The Confessions is not about Augustine, but about the ideal reader who, irrespective of whether it is true or not, identifies with the narrative concerns and is led towards the same path as that suggested by Augustine. The genre of autobiography. If we doubt Derrida's claim that the metaphysics of presence haunts the texts of Western culture, then the one place that this doubt could be laid to rest is that of autobiographical writings. The authors of autobiographical texts want to create the feeling that they are presenting themselves openly to their readers in a "what you read is who I am" approach. In reading these texts, readers feel that they are in the company of the author, who in turn is sharing his life in all its intimacy with him. The justification for reading autobiographical texts is that the reader believes that he is going to learn something about the singularity of the author, to learn something new about the author. Clearly, it is assumed that, to a greater or lesser degree, the author has already some claim to fame, is somebody worth reading about. From the point of view of the author, to communicate his singularity or uniqueness, he must use the conventions of autobiographical writings. Autobiography is a genre which has its own techniques and to which the author complies in order for his text to be recognized as autobiographical rather than, for example, fiction. This is why it would be a failure on the part of the reader to challenge the author's use of the conventions of autobiography, for it would be tantamount to misunderstanding the language game of autobiography. In autobiographical writing, the author is interested in the narrative of his life, rather in the technique he uses to communicate that life. However, the problem that the autobiographer is confronted with is that while he wants to communicate his immediate presence, the only way to do this is through the medium of language. Language places itself between the life of the autobiographer and the text that he is writing. This means that the presence and the transparency that he aspires to communicate is hindered by a language that itself, as it creates an image of him, rather than represent him in his represents an image of him rather than represents him in his pristine state. The tension in autobiographical writing between the general and the singular is analogous to the tension in everyday language use. Language is a conventional social product that each person must use to express his unique identity. The genre of autobiography has raised specific questions with regard to its own status as a form of writing, especially when compared to the genres of the novel, poetry, or drama. Two problems beset the delineation of the genre of autobiography. First, when compared to these other literary genres, it has somehow not quite reached the aesthetic heights that these have attained, coupled with the charge that autobiography itself has an indecent tinge to it. Second, the idea of a genre for autobiography is itself paradoxical, for, on the one hand, the text wants to highlight the singularity of the author, but the process of constructing a genre is one where the singularity of the author of the autobiography is negated, so as to identify those features that are common to different autobiographies. The attempt to define autobiography, as with any definition, is the attempt to mark the boundaries of the genre, to establish its identity and difference. Lejeune's early definition is a useful starting point. An autobiography is a, quote, retrospective prose narrative produced by a real person concerning his own existence, focusing on his individual life, in particular on the development of his personality, unquote. This definition provides some of the predicates that can be attributed to autobiographical writing. It has the form of a story, narrated in the past, by the person concerning his own personal development. All these fit quite well into Augustine's Confessions. The problem is that this definition does not separate sharply enough the difference between autobiographical writings and fictional ones. Someone might easily write an imaginary autobiography, which would lead to the question, how do we know that the author is telling the truth? For some time, the justification of the truth of the autobiographical text had rested upon the notion of the intentionality of the author. A text communicates the truth because the author, as the originator of the text, intended it precisely to be true. This answer is unsatisfactory because it is circular. It asks us to believe the truth of a text because its author is truthful. But we know that the author is telling the truth, or is truthful, if we take the text as being truthful in the first place. The concept of intentionality has been subjective to several criticisms by both the new critics of the 1930s and the 1940s, as well as the post-structuralists of the 1980s. It is not the purpose of this paper to get into the merits or demerits of their claims, a debate that is still open to controversy, but rather to unhinge the concept of truth from that of intentionality. The narrative form of conversion. Now, imagine this hypothetical scenario. The BBC announces that a recent archaeological find has unearthed a previously unknown letter by Saint Augustine, written or dedicated on his deathbed, dictated on his deathbed, where he states that he enjoyed thoroughly writing the Confessions, as it was his only fictional narrative. How would you react to such news? Would you go to your library and burn the Confessions? Or would you reread it, thinking to yourself that, fictional or not, you still have something to learn from it? The Confession stands out in the history of autobiographies for two reasons. It is the first, from a historical point of view, and it provides a model that subsequent autobiographers were to follow. This is not to say that ancient writers, classical writers, did not produce autobiographies or did not write about themselves, but rather that the writing of oneself in the Confessions is the first to describe with such vivid intensity the subject reflecting upon his own inner life and experiences. As a narrative text, the Confessions is the story of Augustine's life from his boyhood through to his youth until his conversion to Christianity. It is a narrative constructive along the opposition of sin and salvation, with the former identified through a series of intellectual and moral errors, and the latter written from the standpoint of the Confessions as the rejection of the life of sin. The conversion of Augustine is one that involves his whole way of being. It is a transformation of both his life, whether intellectually or behaviorally, morally. Peter Brown argues that the Confessions are a, quote, strictly intellectual autobiography, unquote, on the grounds that the external world is the world of sin that Augustine rejects, while the inner world, the world of the intellect, of the spirit, is the one which leads to his salvation. This claim seems lopsided, in that it places the weight of Augustine's rejection of sin upon the external world, ignoring his adherence to the intellectual side of Manichaeism. His life, during the period as a hearer with the Manichaeans, was also one of sin. Brown's emphasis on the intellect seems misplaced, as it reduces the scope of the autobiography to a theoretical exercise that does not take into consideration the existential elements of the author's life, a life that is revealed in a number of concrete situations, the stealing of the pears, going to the theater, and so on. Paula Fredriksson identifies two characteristics of conversion narratives. They are A, apologetic, in that the convert must explain both to himself and his audience his old self and his new self, in other words, the past and the present. The second characteristic, B, conversion narratives are anachronistic because they are out of time, since the past is being interpreted from the point of the present, from the point of view of the present. Fredriksen writes that a conversion narrative, quote, is a condensed or disguised description of the convert's present, which he legitimates through his retrospective creation of a past and a self, unquote. Along similar lines, Nock defines conversion as, quote, the reorientation of the soul of an individual, his deliberate turning from indifference or from an earlier form of piety to another, unquote. Conversion can be of two types: instantaneous, as in the conversion of Saint Paul, or one that that takes time, as in the conversion of Saint Augustine. The concept of conversion seems to suggest a break from one way of life to another, a break where the past is completely left behind. In a sense, this is true, but in the case of religious conversions, the past is not dead, but rather serves the religious purpose of present, of the present and the future. The past is reinterpreted in such a way as it seems to inexorably lead to the conversion. Augustine's Manichaean days and his bodily desires have their place in the grand scheme of his life, and God's plans for him. The confessions are a narrative where each part, no matter how trivial, is a crucial step in the construction of the whole. The sins that Augustine has committed are placed within the larger whole of the Catholic faith and salvation. So too, his personality is transformed from a fragmented into a complete one. Unlike Kierkegaard's aesthete, who moves to an ethical sphere of existence before arriving at the religious sphere of existence, Augustine's conversion moves directly from the aesthetic to the religious. What is interesting is that the past that had constituted the life of Augustine plays a double role. It is blameworthy on its own, but once it is inserted into the narrative that culminates with his conversion, the same blameworthy past is reevaluated positively. Time itself has been converted. In this sense, the Confessions is not only about Augustine's conversion to Christianity, or for that matter, his conversion to the doctrines of Manichaeism, but has the structure of conversion inbuilt within the text. If Augustine's conversion enables the past to be reinscribed within a larger whole, this model of conversion as reinscription is replayed in two episodes. The first episode is the theft of the pears, that reads to contemporary ears as a highly overrated event. For Augustine, however, it demonstrates the banality of sin. The pears were stolen not because the boys were hungry, but for the pleasure of transgressing the moral religious code, of doing something to spite the world. This pleasure in transgression, the feeling that, quote, it's good to be bad, unquote, acquired in the company of others, is what constitutes the sin. As Anderson has pointed out, Augustine reads this incident as showing that while sinning can, though not necessarily, be committed with others, the necessary condition for salvation is the individual in isolation from the crowd. It is because he was caught in the laughter and the fun and games of being with the crowd that Augustine participates in the theft, something that, had he been alone, he would not have done. As Heidegger noted, being with others always already entails an inauthentic state, since one does the same things as others do, goes with the flow. From within a religious and Augustinian context, one might argue that social life has the tendency towards sin, by virtue of the fact that in a crowd, individuals generate an attitude that transgresses religious norms. The theft of the pears fits into the conversion pattern, as this episode is an event that makes sense within the context of Augustine's complete life. A contingent or chance event has been transformed into a necessary one that culminates with his baptism. The second episode is the final conversion of Augustine that takes place in a garden where, after having removed himself physically from all others, he hears a child's voice chanting tolelege, meaning pick it up and read it, unquote. This fragment was part of a child's game, but Augustine reads this as the voice of God addressing him directly. The passage from the Bible that is chosen at random is from Paul's epistle to the Romans, and understandably is interpreted by Augustine as an explicit reference to his own life. I quote Paul, "Not in riotousness and drunkenness, not in lewdness and wantonness, not in strife and rival, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh and its lusts," unquote. The model of conversion, as the transformation of an original state to another, is being replayed with the voice of the child and the context of the game, identified as the final catalyst for Augustine's complete conversion. Given this textual origin to the conversion scene, it comes as no surprise that this scene is dominated by literary motives. As Fleischmann demonstrates, the elements that mark the conversion scene are elements taken from Jewish, pagan, and Christian traditions. These include the vision, the children's game, and the random opening of a privileged text. As a teacher of rhetoric, Augustine would most certainly have known these literary motives, which leads Fleischmann to conclude that, quote, his experience at the turning point of his life was, from the moment itself, an act of literary interpretation, unquote. Wright develops this point to argue that Augustine's conversion is entangled in a web of textual conversions, from the conversion of Ponticianus just prior to Augustine's, a conversion that is itself generated by a reading of the life of Saint Anthony, who in turn was influenced by reading a passage from the Bible. Anderson concludes, quote, if conversion follows conversion, we could equally say that story succeeds story in an endless act of reading and interpretation, close quote. The challenge to Augustine. Given that the pivotal scene in the Confessions is modeled along literary lines, it is one short step into thinking that perhaps all the Confessions should be treated as a fictional narrative, with autobiographical writings as a species of fiction. If one accepts this, then the question one is tempted to ask is, why should we believe what Augustine tells us? Augustine has the foresight to realize that some of his readers might question the truth status of his text. Quote, Augustine, and when they hear me speaking of myself, how do they know whether what I say is true? I too, O Lord, confess even so to you that men, to whom I cannot show whether I am telling the truth, may hear me. Those whose ears have been opened to me by my love will believe me, unquote. Augustine's answer, in other words, is that while he cannot lie to God, since God knows everything, in the case of humans, he must rely on their charity, on their goodwill towards him. However, not everyone has been as charitable towards him as he had hoped, and some scholars have challenged his claims to truth. Here, I will outline two of these challenges. In the title, On Not Retracting the Unconfessed, Elizabeth A. Clarke discusses the occurrences of Augustine's forgetting in the Confessions. Memory plays a pivotal role in the production of this text, as Augustine wrote it in 397/8 AD, several years after his conversion in 387. And the first nine books are a recollection of the events that led to his conversion. This remembering should not have been such a problem for Augustine, who was lauded for his skill in remembering texts without any preparation. Given his impressive memory, Clarke wonders why in the Confessions Augustine forgot to mention that he had a sister, why she seems to have been completely wiped out from his life. Or, given Augustine's preoccupation with philosophical and theological issues, why did he forget to mention the Donatists? Clarke writes, quote, "Since modern scholars agree that Donatism was the dominant manifestation of Christianity in North Africa in the years between Augustine's birth and his assumption of priesthood, we may well be puzzled by their erasure from the Confessions. And this all the more so when we learn that in another letter dated 398, Augustine, as Bishop of Hippo Regius, asked for a meeting between Catholic and Donatist bishops to be held in Tagaste. We also learn in a letter of 407 or 408 from Augustine that for some time Tagaste had been entirely Donatist, but had changed to Catholicism as a result of Roman imperial laws. Commentators have argued that this omission is not one of intentional neglect. Brown, for example, argues that Augustine fails to remember the Donatist for two reasons. In the Confessions, Augustine was engaged with the Manichaean and pagan philosophers, and that the Donatist movement was not intellectual enough. However, Clarke challenges this account that seeks to exclude the present from the past, as though the past were an in itself. Her account is more poignant in that it is the very nature of conversion to reinterpret the past from the horizon of the present. Given that the Confessions were written at a point in time much later than the events actually narrated, and given that conversion narratives are a rereading of the past from the present, it seems odd, to say the least, that Augustine, whose present was concerned with polemical engagement with the Donatists, excludes them completely. While it seems to be well-founded that his conversion was the result of his response to other movements, his failure to mention the Donatists at all seems to be a case of selective forgetting. It seems strange that someone who claims to have been converted to the true faith should exclude those others, the Donatists, who in turn were considered themselves as possessing the true faith. In Augustine's Unconfessions, James O'Donnell challenges the narrative that has come to dominate readings of the Confessions, where what Augustine says is considered as the truth. His purpose in this paper is to offer, quote, "multiple narratives of the same Augustinian life stretch," close quote. O'Donnell gives us a sample of what he has in mind with the story of Alepius. Alepius, who, in a classic case of finding himself at the wrong place at the wrong time, is caught with an axe that he comes across, that he finds. An axe that a would-be thief dropped during his escape. Alepius is arrested, but upon being recognized, his story of innocence is listened to, and upon further investigation, the culprit is caught. O'Donnell writes, quote, "I do not see that any reader of Augustine's Confession, ancient or modern, has ever paused to doubt the truth of this story for a moment. Let us pause. If this were not Augustine telling us the story, and if it were not Alepius of whom he spoke, would we be so certain? Is there anything we know of Alepius that makes it impossible that he himself was the culprit? Unquote. This is a tantalizing indictment of everything we take for granted in the customary practice of reading autobiographies. While the scholarship has challenged the veracity of the narrative of the child, of the child's voice, O'Donnell points out that the Alepius narrative, or others, have not been subjective to the same critical scrutiny. To argue for his thesis that reading Augustine's life, or anyone else's, should be oriented towards a multiplicity of narratives, O'Donnell offers three readings of the same event. A. The dominant or privileged reading is the one that is routinely accepted. This reading concerns Augustine's return to Tagaste in 388, where he devoted his time to philosophy and the scriptures, avoiding the cities so as not to become a bishop. His plan eventually fails, as during a visit to Hippo, he is forced to become a priest. B. That's the dominant reading. B. The failed opportunist reading, from the perspective of someone who is not particularly interested in Augustine's religious enthusiasms. Augustine, having failed to make something of himself in Milan, returns to Tagaste after a year's traveling, and there he works as a country squire living idyllically, and as a member of the local senate, manages the finances with a view to minimizing expenses. After the death of his son, Adeodatus, Augustine turns towards religion. Quote, he is seen selling his property and slipping away to Hippo to take up duties as a minor cleric in the schismatic church of the Caecilianists there. In doing so, he manages, like many others in his time, to evade the duties of citizenship and senate membership, but it was unlikely that he would amount to anything in his new and obscure role. C. The third reading interpretation. The reluctant hero reading, where upon returning to Tagaste, Augustine withdraws from all worldly activity, including religious activity. Quote, his religious affiliation, if he showed one then, was the sedate and Romanized Caecilianist church, rather than the majority church of Africa, but he regularly expressed skepticism about the clerics who populated all churches. The death of his son made a real difference, of course. He was actively considering alternate ways of life when he visited Hippo in 391, but it was a genuine surprise then when he was made a priest. Everything about him rebelled at the thought. More than thought, rebelled, however, he ran away. Shortly after the ordination, he left Hippo unannounced and returned to Tagaste, to the scandal of his fellow citizens of Hippo. But bad conscience followed him, and shortly thereafter he wrote to Bishop Valerius, making diplomatic amends. And then, a few weeks later, he skulked back to Hippo and to his future. End quote. According to O'Donnell, while the first of these readings is the accepted and dominant one, it is the last one that is most persuasive for, quote, for good documentary reasons. End quote. The triumph of the dominant reading is part of the measures taken by Augustine to ensure the success of the confessions in the light of the skepticism with which they were originally received. In the midst of the controversy with the Donatist Church, Augustine could ill afford to confess another narrative, but the one we find in the Confessions, where his baptism is the showpiece of his conversion to Christianity. In this way, Augustine could repel the accusation made by the African Christian Church that he was a, quote, unreconstructed Manichaean, close quote, by questioning the validity of his baptism, and that he had taken the side of the Chalcedonian Church, the letter being read as the gesture of opportunism given its association with the Roman authorities. Confessional narratives of Augustine or of others entail the editing of one's life to transform the past and prepare the future, with the result that, quote, much of the real experience of their lives was thereby effaced and moved into the shadow world, in the shadow world of the things that were unconfessed, close quote. So now it's time to defend the confessions. Given this challenge to some of the truth claims made by Augustine, one might be tempted to dismiss the confessions in their entirety. But this is to throw the baby with the bathwater. On my reading, the value of the confessions lies not in whether Augustine is telling the truth or not, but in the message that he is communicating. This message is both universal and has the form of a discourse of edification. I am arguing for the perhaps old-fashioned idea that the purpose of the confessions is to edify its readers. The narrative of Augustine's life and his journey towards salvation would still retain its perlocutionary value, even if the episodes narrated were fictional. This is why those who have criticized Augustine as engaging in spiritual hagiography, because he uses the debasement of his life and subsequent conversion as an exercise in self-admiration, or those who have read the confessions as, quote, the intimate record of a neurotic conflict, close quote, are reading the text as psychological accounts, ignoring the universal philosophical and theological purposes of the text. The confessions is a text written by a master rhetorician who had a specific target audience. The challenge that the converted Augustine faced concerned the use of rhetoric. As a rhetorician, he was aware of the power of language to produce emotional effects upon the reader. But he also knew that these emotional effects could be generated through fictional narratives. From his own experience of pagan literature and the theater, Augustine worried that his readers might not distinguish between his own factual autobiography from fiction, since there seems to be no clear-cut criteria for maintaining the distinction between autobiography and fiction. Augustine preempts any possible confusion of autobiographical fact with fiction by warning his readers of the moral dangers associated with fiction, as opposed to the genuine salutary effects derived from his own autobiography. In addition, Augustine also displays a further anxiety in that while he associates rhetoric with pagan literature, he was now using rhetoric to further the Christian cause. However, by reading Augustine against himself, it becomes evident that his fears were unfounded. As a rhetorician, Augustine knows that a text is constructed with a particular or reader or audience in mind. With the confessions, the ideal reader finds himself in the same predicament or predicaments as Augustine. The ideal reader reads himself into the text. The many episodes narrated until the conversion in Book 9 are common to everyone all over the world. In this sense, they are universal features of the human condition. Who has never stolen or lied or committed any or all of the sins narrated by Augustine? This explains why, although the Confessions is directed and dedicated to God, who always already knows the story of his life, Augustine hopes that his confessions will be overheard by other persons and will therefore serve the purpose of edification. So too, as a rhetorician narrating the story of his past, a number of factors come into play. An interpretation of one's life is conditioned by what one chooses to tell about that past. Not only is it impossible to say everything, but one must choose from the many episodes that constitute a life. One must choose those that are significant. Otherwise, the past would be just a chaotic, innumerable jumble of episodes with no order to them. whereas the autobiographer wants to portray his life as a whole, as having a narrative sequence. This is why not only autobiographical narratives, but any narrative needs to undergo a process of selectivity and editing. The process of selection and editing is even more apparent in the way memory works. Memory is the resource of the autobiographer, for it is through the faculty of memory that the life of the autobiographer can be rescued from the past and oblivion. The problem is that many autobiographers seem to consider the contents of their memory as transparent pictorial representations, lying in wait for activation. This view, however, fails to take into account that what is remembered is done so from the perspective or horizon of the present. There is no past as it actually happened, since this past is recollected from the present, with all the interests that the present holds over the autobiographer. The choices of what is remembered from a past is as significant as it is bound to the purposes of the present. So too, remembering the past and communicating it needs language to be brought into existence. The pictures of the past would remain pictures locked up in Augustine's memory were it not for language to bring that past into the present. My defense of Augustine lies in this understanding of rhetoric and memory. By any account, the confessions are the product of Augustine's craftsmanship with language, so as to narrate his life. Since this narrative, as with any narrative, excludes some things and includes others to create a harmonious structure, the question of whether the individual episodes actually happened or not, or whether they are a product of Augustine's imagination, is irrelevant. On my reading, the episodes that constitute the narrative of the text need to be reinscribed within the broader context of Augustine's desire to communicate or get through to the reluctant ID reader. The Confessions is a gift in which Augustine offers his life as a narrative example to the ID reader in the hope that the latter recognizes himself in the narrative and who, as a result, is awakened to the possibility of salvation. Thank you.
Għadkom kem smajtu l-lekċer organizzata mill-Istitut Agostinjan bis-suġġett Wistin il-Filosfu. Il-kellim ewlieni kien Dr. Claude Mangione.